Good morning, Chair.
And how are you? And compliments.
Compliments, Pastor Susan. Compliments, compliments. Ma'am, I'm okay. Surviving. And you?
I'm surviving. Even if it's so difficult, but I'm surviving. You wanted to say something, dear?
No, over
well,
to you.
I wanted to say there was an apology that I hope not be available, but indicated I have them so much.
Oh, thank you very much, DM.
DM Swata is leading us here.
Oh, good. No. You are welcome. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the department, welcome the provinces. I remember we extended this invitation to the House of Traditional Leaders. Hope they are in the meeting. And welcome honorable members. Lastly, to welcome two DMs, DM Kwasha, DM Tami. You are welcome to our meeting. This is our first meeting with the department this year. We are very happy to see you coming back after the difficult time that we were facing as the country. But we thank God that you, all of you in the department, you are surviving. I'm not going to waste time because today we are sitting at 2 o'clock whereby some of the members of the committee are going to debate. Now I have to make sure that I give them time to go and prepare themselves. Without wasting time, after saying so, you are welcome. Pascal, I just want to take the apologies.
We only got one apology, Mamukause.
Okay.
Yes, so that's so far the only apology. I'll alert you if we get any more. Thank you.
Okay. I just want to check with the provinces. From the provinces, any apologies? From the provinces, any apologies? Man. Let me do apologies from his department.
Thank you very much, sir. An apology that I would like to forward is that of our honorable minister who would not be able to be here at 8 a.m. We had the cabinet committee meeting. And because of the responsibilities, different responsibilities, there are supposed to be a portfolio committee clashing with this one. So do not expect the minister to be in this meeting. Thank you very much, Chair. Or should I proceed?
No, thank you very much, DM. You can proceed.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me just indicate that we welcome this opportunity always to come and interact with the Select Committee and all our other structures which are meant to strengthen our democratic process. We're here today to brief the committee, the Select Committee, on what is generally called ultra upgrading of land tenure rights. All this and your role in oversighting are matters that are meant to take South Africa from a colonial apartheid past to a non-racial, non-sexist, democratic country. So we take this as building blocks towards that ideal society. If you look at the matter that we are supposed to be briefing you on, it strikes at the core of oppressive legislation by the past regimes. discussion of women as fellow human beings. Whether you refer to the same matter, and so we really appreciate, and Chair, as you have indicated already, that the day is really packed and filled. I do not want to waste any time any further. Our team, as I know it, has the acting DG here, but it's going to be without further ado, I hereby, if you so allow, want to give over to him to do the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. He can continue.
So thank you very much, and good morning to the Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members of the Select Committee. And also good morning to our DM, Honorable Squatcher, Honorable DM Dlamini. I had asked my colleague, Mr. Sifele, to assist with uploading the documents on the screen. I see that already it's appearing on the screen. The presentation outline, as you notice, is short. Firstly, it starts with introductory remarks about the principal act that the DM quite has already alluded to briefly, and then we deal with the two constitutional court cases that led to the bill after having declared certain sections of the ALTRA Act unconstitutional, and then we deal with the specific sections of the Principal Act that are affected by the bill, and then also we take the Select Committee through the bill, what the bill proposes, and then also we outline the amendments that were made by the Portfolio Committee when the bill is introduced, and then conclude by remarks on the way forward from the department side in terms of communal land tenure in general, which is the subject of the ALTRA Act. Now, with regard to the introduction, as I've indicated, it's about the Principal Act. The Principal Act is an act that provides for the upgrading of land tenure rights. It's an act that was passed in 1991 by the apartheid government. At the time, they were trying to introduce what they regarded as some reform measures. What they were seeking to do with this act was that the rights that in the schedule to the rights that unfortunately applied only to blacks, because of the rights that were accorded to Africans in terms of the proclamations that were passed. The idea was to make those rights upgraded from, in terms of townships, there were deeds of grants, and in terms of traditional communities, it was the PTO certificate, Ancient Occupied Certificate. Now, what the ALTRA Act sought to do was to provide for the conversion of those rights into ownership or into title deeds. As I've indicated, with regard to black townships in particular, the deeds of grants, which were held by in respect of mostly four-roomed townships, were to be converted into ownership. And then in the rural areas, in the villages, the permission to occupy certificates were supposed to be upgraded into ownership or title deeds as well. Now, the Ralph, can just go through the slides, if you can go through the go to the fourth slide, if you can, so that I can take the members through. Ralph, can you hear me? I was trying to check if you can open the slide so that I can take the members through the slide. Otherwise, I will do it from my slide this side.
Now, what Teba sought to do also
the ALTA Act. Any person who is the holder of a permission to occupy certificate has the right to approach the deed office to have that P2 certificate converted into a title deed. In other words, into ownership. Now, what happened is that TEBA also approached the municipality with a view to convert that permission to occupy into a title deed. But what happened is that the municipality refused to confirm the conversion of that PTO into ownership. And the defense the municipality used was that Section 3 of ALTA Act was not in operation in same local municipality in the Joe Private District, Eastern Cape. As I've indicated, what happened is that when the ALTA Act was passed in 1991, obviously it did not apply to the former TDVC territories, because it is not supposedly they were not part of South Africa at that time. But what since the event in 1998, the democratic government sought to extend the application of the ALTA Act to former TPVC territories. But in doing that, the democratic government excluded Sections 3, Section 19, and Section 20, which deals with implementation of the Act in those territories. In a speak now, if members look at Section 25A of the Principal Act, it says that the Act applies throughout the Republic with the exception of Section 3, Section 19, and Section 20. What that meant is that although Section 3 of the Act indicates that the holder of a PTO can approach the deeds office to have that PTO converted into ownership, in the former TBVC territories, those sections do not apply because they've been excluded by the 1998 Amendment Act from applying in those territories. That's why TEBA challenged the municipality to indicate that if Section 3, in terms of which it can convert its permission to occupy into title deed, does not apply, then the section discriminates against TEBA on the basis that it applies in certain areas but not in certain areas, and then pleaded discrimination and then unfair discrimination, violation of the right to equality, a violation of the right to equal protection of the law. And then the court agreed with TEBA Property Trust and then declared Section 25 unconstitutional to the extent that it does not bring into operation Section 3 of ALTA Act into operation in all the areas of the Republic. Now, coming to the sections that are affected by the bill, it's firstly Section 2. Section 2, as I've indicated, is a section that deals with the conversion of deeds of grants, and that is for township, for rent houses in the main, that the holders of those deeds of grants can approach the deeds office to have those deeds of grants converted into ownership. It is a section that discriminated in its application against women in particular. It is a section that the court has said that it must be amended to provide for taking into account objections and claims by persons other than males, in this case, females. The second section that is affected, which is being introduced through the bill, is Section 14A. When the court declared constitutional, it made certain pronouncements, and it is unconstitutional. The conversions that took place in the past, especially those that took place in favor of women, remain valid. And then also, that their rights are protected. Now, the last section, as I've indicated, that is affected to Section 25A, is the section that deals with the application of the Act. It is the section that says that the whole Act, with the exception of Sections 3, 19 and 20, applies for the Republic. It is the section that was challenged by Teva on the basis that it does not afford Teva an opportunity to convert his PTO in terms of Section 3 of the ALTRA Act. Now, with regard to Section 2, the way it's being amended by the bill is that because the court has said that we must do away with the automatic conversion because it does not grant other affected parties an opportunity to object and also to claim, the court has said that we must introduce mechanisms that do away with automatic conversions, which is what has since happened is that you notice in the bill that what we're doing is that we are introducing a system where persons looking to convert their deeds of grant in terms of for Section 2 must lodge an application to the minister. And then the minister, in terms of the bill, as soon as she or he has received the application, will publish the application in the notice for other interested persons to become aware that a particular individual who is the holder of a deed of grant intends to convert that deed of grant into a title deed so that if they want to object, they can object. And then the minister, once he or he has received the objections, will consider the application together with the determination on facts as to who should be of that forum house, or who will be the rightful registered holder of that deed of grant. And that does not exclude joint ownership. In instance where the house, for instance, is left to two brothers, they could become co-owners. Even if they are sisters as well, there is nothing in law that prevents individuals from co-owning a single property. It's depending with regard to rights at the moment, with regard to laws of ownership in general. So the idea that a forum house in a township must always have head of a family who is supposed to be a male person, who exercises authority over other persons in the household, is archaic, is paternalistic, it's how the apartheid government interpreted the law of succession for Africans in general. So that's what we are seeking to address with Section 2 amendments as introduced by the bill. Section 14A, which we are inserting through the bill in the Principal Act, is the one that, as I've indicated, the court has ordered that conversions that took place before 1994, in particular in favor of women, remain valid, and that any person who is aggrieved by conversions that took place has the right to raise the court to have those conversions set aside and then deal with the consequences. Section 25A, which is the last section, as I've indicated that we are seeking to amend, you will notice from the slide that I have quoted Section 25A verbatim. It provides that the ALTRA Act, from the date of commencement of the Amendment Act, that was in 1998, that it applies throughout the Republic, but with the exception of Sections 3, 19 and 20. Now, as I've indicated, the exclusion of Section 3 from operation of the Act is the one that gave rise to a constitutional court challenge by Teva. Teva said that in terms of Section 3, it wanted to convert the PTO into a title deed. And that's when the municipality said that Section 3 is not applicable in the former were sought to do in the bill is that we had amended Section 25A to make the whole act without exception applicable throughout the Republic. And then you will notice as we go to the following slide that this is an area where we had a difference of opinion with the portfolio committee, because the portfolio committee did not accept our proposal and then introduced its own proposal, and then we will discuss that, and then the committee will see how best to deal with that aspect. Now, slide 10 deals with amendments that the portfolio committee effected on the bill as introduced. They are not substantial changes, except the last that I've just spoken about with regard to the application of the Act throughout the Republic. The first changes or additions the portfolio committee made is the one that deals with the members will remember that when I indicated that the system that we're introducing now to replace the automatic conversion is one where individuals who are holders of diesel grant apply to the minister for the conversion of the deed of grant. Now the bill provided that after receiving the application for a conversion, the minister must publish that application in the government gazette to notify interested persons who may want to object to that proposed or application for conversion. What the portfolio committee did, it added that in addition to the government gazette, the application for conversion must also be published in one local newspaper through the relevant social media, and then also at the local municipal offices. In other words, there must be a notice that is attached at or displayed at a local municipal office where the deed of grant resides, and there must be means from the department side that will also notify members of the public of the application that they would have received. In addition, the portfolio, once the minister has received application, informing the affected parties of the progress of such application, that the application is still being considered, you know, if the minister is still gathering facts, at least the applicants must be kept informed of the developments in the application. The portfolio committee also added provisions in the bill that gives the minister the power to designate a person that is appointed either an official or any person to assist the minister in determining the facts. Usually there will be a district, for instance, where in a foreign house that has been left with children and other, there will be other interested persons, you know, uncles, aunts. That if one person claims ownership, it will only be necessary and important that the minister, in considering the application, designate somebody who will assist in establishing the facts around the application, the ownership, the history, from the relatives and representatives to the rightful owners of that particular deed of grant or house, so that when the determination is made at the end of the day on the application, it is based on established facts. Now, lastly, what the other insertions the portfolio committee made was that the person who the minister appoints to assist the minister in gathering the facts will also have the power to mediate between the parties. For instance, if you have children, aunts, uncles who are having disputes or are disputing the ownership of a particular individual, the person who is gathering the facts can also have the power to mediate between the parties, trying to establish with the rightful owner and then at least to settle the parties. These are, we believe, the matter can be resolved, which could also include the issue of explaining to the parties the current laws of succession that can be employed to ensure, for instance, joint ownership, or they can dispose of the property and then share the proceeds. But the bottom line being that the person who the minister appoints to assist, the minister is able to assist the parties to resolve disputes, if there are disputes, and also to report to the minister on the outcome of that attempted mediation. The last the portfolio committee amended, basically the portfolio committee rejected the clause that we had introduced to the department that said or stated that Section 25A, as I've explained, applies throughout the Republic without exception. Remember, this was it was as a result of the single matter where the Constitutional Court said that the section of the Act which excluded Sections 3, 19 and 20 is unconstitutional. But the Portfolio Committee decided only to include in the application of the Act Section 3, as ordered by the Court, and then continue to exclude Sections 19 and 20, which is where, as a department, we differed with the Portfolio Committee. Now, the matter is brought to the Select Committee to make a determination, and that's basically what our request is. And the reason why we had, as the department proposed, that all the sections, 3, 19 and 20, should be made applicable, is that the continued exclusion of Sections 19 and 20 can be challenged by any person. For instance, to say that the sections continue not to apply in the former TBVC territories, and therefore, as persons resident in those territories, we feel hard done by, because the law is not protecting us. We are still excluded from the sections are still excluded from applying in our areas, and therefore, there is no equality before the law, equal protection of the law. In fact, maybe it's important to state that Sections 19 and 20 of ALTA deal with the transfer of communal land to communities, to traditional communities. This communal land is what is commonly referred to as the 13% of the land that was set aside for Africans by the apartheid government. It is the land that constituted, in the main, former so-called homelands. The sections provide that the minister, our minister, who is currently holding that land in trust, or currently vests that land to its rightful owners, which are the communities that are the current occupiers of that land. Now, Sections 19 and 20 enables the minister to transfer communal land to communities. Now, we had proposed that these sections must also apply so that the minister can transfer the land if she deems fit. And then the portfolio committee said that no, these sections must continue to apply until such time that the department, we have finalized legislation that we're developing that deals with communal land in general, which is what we're working on as the department. In conclusion, those are basically the sections that we are amending through the bill. We decided to concentrate only on the sections that we declared unconstitutional. Because when the court declared those things unconstitutional, it gave the department and parliament only 18 months to come up with an amendment bill. So we, together with the spiritual advisors, were of the opinion that if we were to try and during this 18 months period, try and introduce all new land reform measures related to communal land, it will not take 18 months to complete, and therefore the bill must be restricted to only the sections that are declared unconstitutional, which is section 2 and then section 25A, to the extent that it excludes section 3 from the application of the Act, and section 14A, which introduced in measures that the court declared on, that, for instance, past conventions in favor of women remain valid, and that those who are aggrieved by the previous conventions are free to approach the courts for appropriate relief. What the department is busy with currently is overhaul of all existing laws regulating communal land. It's old laws, as I've indicated. The communal land is still governed in terms of the old proclamation of 1969, and then for the townships was the proclamation of 1962. We assist with the responsibility to overrule all those apartheid and we have already started working with the minister has undertaken that it will be introduced in Parliament during the course of this year. That then concludes the presentation. I hope that I've not been too technical in explaining the bill. In the main, in summary, the sections of the ALSA Act that were declared unconstitutional is sections 2.1 and section 25A. Section 2.1 is the one that provides for automatic conversions of deeds of grants in respect of township houses. Section 25A is the one that excludes Section 3 from application of the Act, and Section 3 is the one that deals with the automatic conversion of permission to occupy certificates in traditional communities into title deeds. It is those sections that the court says must be amended to provide for quality, both with regard to application of the law as well as with regard to the enforcement of individual rights that the bill is all about. And that's what we are requesting Parliament to assist us to take through so that we can have the Principal Act properly amended. I must also indicate, Chair and all of the members, that the Constitutional Court gave us until the end of April, I think, to finalize the bill. The initial period of 18 months expired last year in April. The minister approached the court for extension, which was duly granted until the end of April this year. That then concludes the presentation, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Advocate. I don't know whether both DM Kwasha or DM Dlamini wanted to add something before I can give back to the honourable members to ask questions. That is Kwasha. And that is Dlamini.
No, thank you very much. I took that the presenter has comprehensively and neatly summarized what we are about and what the amendments are and what we seek to achieve. So I would not want to waste any time. I don't know whether my colleagues...
No, Chair, I want to thank very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Department and DM. Honourable members, now I'm going to give back to you to ask questions. And when I'm saying honourable members, I'm saying even the provinces, because you are in the meeting, the provinces, you are welcome to ask questions or to make an input. Thanks. I'll start with travel from Northern Cape, Free State, Eastern Cape, Honorable Western Cape, from Western Cape, and then Honorable Ngwenya, and then Honorable Northwest, from Northwest, and then Honorable Machire. Oh no, before Machire, Honorable from Limpopo, and then, yeah, Kifex, Ibiza. All the provinces, I think I've called them. And then Daddy Machive, he was the last Honorable Machive. I see Honorable Nana, he's in the meeting. Yes, you can start, Honorable.
Honorable
Kute, yeah. How did I forget you?
How did you forget you, Chairperson?
I can't, really. You are noted before Mr. Matibe. Yes, let's start. Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to give an input and apply my mind on this piece of legislation in front of us. I must firstly say that disheartening and disappointing push the Twitters into democracy, journey 7 basically almost. And, you know, we still sit with a piece of legislation that is very strongly entrenched from the apartheid era, where certain people have got certain rights and others don't have the same rights. And that the department could not, replace this piece of legislation by now already. That it's only now a work in progress. And in the process of that, you know, we are basically withholding opportunities from community members within the tribal areas. And especially now, Chair, with the economy that's under pressure, and where we need to open up opportunities for people. A piece of property that you can own, if everybody that understands our economy and how it works very clearly, is that if once you have a piece of property, you actually have got something that can catapult you in out of poverty and into opportunity. So, Jay, I see the amendments, you know, that is in front of us, but you know, it's really not enough. This piece of legislation should totally be scrapped. I heard the department saying, you know, that there's not enough time to replace it. But I mean, if this was the opportunity to present us with a proper piece of legislation that's up to date with our constitution, because we are now, amending some pieces, and then I don't understand. Why, the exclusion of section 19 and 20, if we look at the 25A, because I mean, if we read through that, sorry, I just want to get to the section here on the original bill before the amendment. I mean, section 19. Deals with legal drive to obtain property. Tribe shall be capable of obtaining land in ownership and subject to subsection 2 of selling, exchanging, donating, letting, go on that. I mean, it's actually, I sit in a catch-22 situation here, you know, because I feel that this bill is not really going to do much to improve the rights in total of tribal communities that really need these rights, you know, to be able to catapult themselves. But in the same breath, you know, there is some good sections, you know, where women is giving equal rights. So, but okay, let's work with what we have. I believe that section 19, that as I just mentioned, the capacity of a tribe to obtain property, and then section 20, transfer of tribal land to a tribe. A tribe may request the minister to transfer tribal land, the control which vests in the tribe, to a tribe in ownership. So it means they may not own the property, so it means it's still government's property. Because in essence, all this land is held in government hands, and the Honourable Squatcher can confirm that as the Deputy Minister, that this land is in fact in government lands and not in communal communal hands. And yeah, okay, that's it. I want to understand from the department what was the reasons given within the portfolio committee for the exclusion of 19 and 20, but the inclusion of section 3 in terms of 25A. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Honourable Gauteng, please. Honourable from Gauteng. Okay.
Chairperson, to you and also to the minister and then also to the officials and the members of the NCOP. Chairperson, yeah. The only thing that I can say is that we must reject this bill right up. We can't sit with legislation, old apartheid legislation. And it is a known fact that African customs, traditions, practices and social relations, the legal system of land administration does not recognize the remains on the periphery of land rights management. These customs and traditions and social relations run deep in South Africa, and the majority of blacks remain landless wherever they occupy land, as that does not come with any formal ownership rights. The bill in its current form merely creates and perpetuates a dual land tenure system, one for the landed whites and another for the black majority of whom are landless. And we need to reject this bill outrightly, Chairperson. Then we cannot also support a bill with limited consultations, because there was no wide consultations on this bill, so it is not even we can't support a bill that has not been widely consulted with. That is one of the major concerns. And if you look now at some of the written submissions, which was only about, I think, 480-odd. I think there is not a good public consultation process that was done. And seemingly also the participation of only a select few people that has access to data that could participate, and that is not good at all. So yeah, I think we need to reject this bill outrightly, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable from Mpumalanga. Romances, I've seen you are in the meeting.
you can participate. Don't feel that you are okay. Eastern Cape.
Playing out in the process of of referring this to traditional leaders as well. And then I just want to make sure it mentions in the memorandum that the bill initially wasn't published for comment. I'm not quite sure about the process. Maybe our legal advisors can help us as well. I just want to make sure, is the department before it published or published it for gazetted, is it supposed to have a process where it is given to the public to be seen and scrutinized, or are we only, or do they, is it sufficient that we only go through a process now after Parliament two houses are working with it? So that's my question for now, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mangwenya.
Chairperson, I welcome the presentation on the process to amend the ALCA Bill, which has been targeted by Parliament as a Section 76 bill. The amendment of this bill has been long overdue. It is unfortunately that it has taken women to be discriminated by this legislation. In order to affect amendments in an attempt to make the legislation to comply with the Constitution of Republic. Chair, I was starting with my observation. Honourable Chairperson, the amendment to the ALCA Bill will bring a great relief and victory to the women, children, and the vulnerable people of this country. I thought I should share my observation and comment before asking questions. Now, Chair, I'm on question. I want to know that can the department provide progress report on a project called One Household, One Hectare, which the department has used only 1% of the budget to fund this project, which involves women. The second question, I wanted to know, Chair, whether the ALCA Bill was referred to Parliament, whether the department had observed with all the legal obligations which it had to follow before introducing the legislation. If yes, can we get a detailed report? And if no, why not? The third question, Chairperson, whether there are any other sections of the Act that if it can be challenged on the basis of Section 2 and 25A, will all can be declared unconstitutionally? If yes, what are those other sections? Last question, Chair. I want to know whether the department will meet its commitment of tabling the communally land tenure bill to Parliament before the end of the current financial year. If no, why not? I thank you, Chairperson.
Judgment that we need to amend we need to then look at those amendments that the Constitutional Court has directed us to amend. It's my own understanding. I think the legal advisor will also then look at that. Let me start with the amendments by the Portfolio Committee. The amendment has put forward there is amendment of Section 3 and to the exclusion of Section 19 and 20 by the Portfolio Committee. And this was the two Constitutional Court judgments. I would like to get the rationale for the Portfolio Committee to not look into issues that were raised by the Constitutional Court. Will that not amount to, let's put it bluntly, defiance of the Constitutional Court ruling? Even if we pass it and it goes, when it is tested, the constitutionality of our amendments are our amendments going to not to be regarded as invalid once again? I think we need serious justification so that when we apply our mind as the select committee together with our provinces and the process of consultation, then we apply our minds in line with the thereof. I know that because it's a Section 76 bill, we can amend and send it back, but we need to get a rationale why they could not consider what the Constitutional Court regarded as unconstitutional and invalid. The other issue that I want the department to assist us on is on the issue of the public participation. Looking at the Lamusa judgment in terms of the time and the participation that is required when we pass the bills, do we have enough time until April to do that participation under the conditions that we are finding ourselves in, which is COVID situation, where we, in terms of the Disaster Management Act, we might not be able to consult more than 50 people at the same time. Do we have enough time to do the consultation, or can we, when we propose or when we are dealing with the consultation process, look at the minister again requesting the extension, because it is coming to us as the select committee now in February, while the deadline is April. I don't want us to engage in a futile exercise where we'll engage, but in line with public participation and in line with the Lamusa judgment, we are found to be wanting in terms of the public participation. The other area was covered by other honorable members in terms of the consultation of traditional leaders, more especially in Section 19 and 20, was there enough consultation so that when we are running this process, we are not boggled by objections and what. And we see that enough public participation has been applied. I can stop there for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
So thank you very much, Honorable Matibe. Any member would like to speak before I can talk? Please put up. Any follow-up question? Maybe you are fine. Okay,
yes, you're fine. Thank you, ma'am.
you are fine. Okay. DM?
It's not easy to make follow-up questions. The department not yet responded. For now,
DM, back to you. Can you respond, DM, and your team? But DM by two.
Yes. I think maybe let me start on this note that I see Mama Bibi in this meeting, and I really want to say we thank God for her health. I know it's not been easy in the last month or so. Having said that, all the questions are much appreciated, and I think we'll try and navigate through them together with the official. And I take this that others are really comments. In my introduction, I indicated that if you look at what we are trying to do, we are dealing with the mammoth task of an arduous road towards creating an equal society. It is quite a challenging road, informed by our history. I would have, and many of us would have preferred to do something that we might, at a glance, think it is scrap all pieces of legislation and replace them with whatever we want to do. We think that we had an undertaking that we want to make sure that in the creation of this United South Africa, we take everybody along. We will have disagreements and agreements. And for us, perhaps it is not even for the department to respond to that, whether we can just break. And so we think to reach our goals in a very careful, united way as South Africans doing it together. The second part is, I do want to confirm that the land is in government hands as custodians on behalf of the people. The third fact is, you see, let me rather say, if you see what we say when we conclude, we say that amendments that we are dealing with are those raised by the Constitutional Court in the two cases discussed above. And we further say that currently all tenure laws, including urban and rural tenure systems, are subject of a comprehensive review process. Saying that, I also want to include the question that was asked, how far are we in the tenure? I think we can safely say that we've taken giant leaps in that regard. We have undertaken in the process of trying to deal with that issue. We have undertaken study tours to three different countries. Countries that have also navigated situations like ours. Traditional authorities, colonial oppression, and we chose those countries in total consultation with civil society, with traditional leaders, and the countries were Botswana, Uganda, and
delegation, that we're not going to go there as a government delegation. We want a South African delegation that will include our department, COCTA department, justice, and also the National House of Traditional Leaders. In fact, the proposed Ghana was proposed specifically by the National House of Traditional Leaders, civil society as well. So our delegation was, and we're also very mindful that we are going to study how they have done it, but we know that that would not be a panacea and a solution that will just bring back and implement. We'll look at our own conditions and see how best we can be able to navigate in our own situation. But it's always good to go and study from those that have done it before. We are now at a stage where we have agreed with the National House of Traditional Leaders that what we have now discussed and adopted as the interministerial committee led by the deputy president will be taken to cabinet and will then be consulted with all the provinces, with traditional authorities in all the provinces, so that when we go to the national summit, we go there not to fight but to seek coherence and see the best way to move forward. So I'm trying to say we're very far in that regard. Of course, we're also disturbed by COVID. We could not go to Ghana, but we went to the other area. Now, then, Chair, I think Honorable Matibe is spot on the issues that becoming a constitutional directive, a constitutional court directive. On the other issue, we really want to see whether we cannot meet that deadline. But we will, as we review things, consider the wise counsel as propagated by him. I also want to say that the issue, all these issues are contested terrain. I cannot say that there has ever been unanimity between us and traditional authorities on matters like this. But we are a progressive government that is fighting to make sure that all persons and all people are equal, both men and women. And I now want to give over to my fellow DM, and after that, if he has anything to say, Phil will take over and the team. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Jefferson, and the DM. Really, with all what DM squad said, there will be nothing much that the work that has been reported here would also want us as South Africa to achieve success in the battle for equality in the country. And indeed, I agree with him on the work that has been done in visiting the countries that he has mentioned and the work that still has got to be done. On what the members of the committee have raised, I think we are encouraged on each and every matter that has been raised, much as things would be difficult. We have to, all of us, move on. And I'm happy that I hear no comment that say we should not go forward on this work. I heard other members saying yes and feeling that should we continue with the work that has been done? I think let's continue to listen to advocate that has made a presentation, and together and meeting the deadline that has been agreed upon. So, Jefferson, I thank you, and the DM has put our matter before the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Advocate.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. And our DMs, the order in which we raised, starting with Honorable Smith. Firstly, raising concerns that there appears to be a piecemeal approach in ALTRA insofar as it also did that doesn't appear to be the case, but in practice, if we look at ALTRA, the Principal Act, it mainly deals with urban tenure. It deals with deeds of grants. ALTRA has about 25 sections. Out of those 25 sections, only 3 sections deal with communal land tenure, which are sections 3, 19, and 20. So the rest deal with urban tenure. Now, in the area of communal land tenure, as DM Squad has indicated, it's true that it may have taken some time since the Communal Land Rights Act of 2004 was declared unconstitutional, which was the first attempt by the Democratic government to introduce legislation on communal land. It was declared unconstitutional in 2009, and since then the department has been trying to work on a new communal land tenure legislation. But as I've indicated, in the ALTRA principal act, it's only 3 sections that deal with communal tenure. And when we have finished developing legislation on communal land tenure, that new communal land tenure legislation will repeal the 3 sections, that is section 3, 19, and 20, that appear currently in ALTRA, so that ALTRA no longer deals with communal land tenure at all. And then ALTRA will be left to deal with urban the land tenure, which it is designed to deal with in the main. So by amending section 2 of ALTRA, it is not a piecemeal approach to amending common land tenure. As I've indicated, it's only 3 sections in ALTRA that deal with communal land. We are dealing with that separately, and then with urban land tenure, one section 2 is amended in accordance with the Constitutional Court's instructions. That would have dealt with urban tenure. What would be remaining that legislation, so that there are mechanisms in place to ensure conversion of apartheid government rights systems to a new system of rights in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution. The second issue raised by Honorable Smith is with regard to Section 25A, that is Sections 3, 19, and 20. I noticed that Honorable Matiba also raised it, in fact, passionately. I will deal with this. And also, Honorable Ngwenya also raised it. The reasons for the portfolio committee to adopt the position that it adopted. This is what happened. sections in the ULTRA Principal Act that deal with communal land tenure. Now, what has happened is that when the Portfolio Committee published the bill for public comment, the committee received a
simply
directly approach the court and say that we want to enforce the rights that we have in terms of the ALSA Act, Section 1920, but unfortunately, those sections do not apply where we are as a community, and then therefore this amounts to a violation of our right to equality. We are not afforded the same rights that other communities outside former homelands enjoy. And on the basis of that, on the basis of the same arguments that were advanced in the same matter, we believe that the court is likely to declare that section unconstitutional again. Now, when the portfolio committee adopted the position that it will still continue with the exclusion of section 1920, they had to weigh between the two scenarios, which one is the lesser evil, whether to continue to exclude them and run the risk of them being declared unconstitutional, or continue to bring them into operation and then allow the minister to act in a manner that they deem it could be unlawful, in a manner that does not protect the already existing rights of individuals. And we had tried to argue that should the minister, which we do not think so the minister will do, should the minister act in a manner that is unlawful, there are currently legal remedies that should be employed. If the minister transfers communal land in a manner that is not appropriate, that administrative action that can be challenged. And I think that can be a mechanism that can be used instead of proceeding with a bill that is on the face of it continues to be unconstitutional. That is, continuing to exclude sections 19 and 20 from the operation of the Act. I hope that I try to explain that part also for Honorable Mathiwe and Honorable Ngwenya. Now coming to the concerns raised by Honorable panels that the bill must be rejected totally. The difficulty that we will still sit with is that the court has declared amended by not introducing amendments in a constitutional court order, and we do not see how not amending the bill will basically assist in the long run. It was one of the reasons why Honorable panel indicated what the bill should be rejected, is that it perpetuates apartheid. There was no wider consultation. Whereas we agree that there was no publication for comment from the department side before the bill was introduced, there was a form of consultation which was invited by the portfolio committee, and a lot of comments were received and then dealt with. To the fact that it perpetuates apartheid, basically that's what we're trying to undo, to transform apartheid legislation into legislation that is in consonance with our democratic principles. The concerns raised by the Honorable Bibi, what are the concerns of traditional authorities, National House of Traditional Leaders, the Provincial One? I think Honorable DM Kwasi tried to deal with that aspect to a certain extent. Suffice it to say that, as I've indicated, there are only three sections in the ALSA Principal Act that deal with communal land, which would be of interest to traditional authorities. Those are sections 9, section 3, 19 and 20. Now, there isn't any change. You know, the bill is not tampering with the provisions of those sections. It only seeks to make them applicable in areas where they were not applicable. And traditional authorities obviously would have an interest in the minister being able to transfer communal land to communities, because in their view, the land must be transferred to them as authority, and the standards for communities. To the extent that sections 19 and 20 enables the minister to transfer communal land to traditional authorities, traditional communities, traditional authorities would be happy, but the devil will be in the detail whether in transferring communal land it is transferred in accordance with their demands that it be transferred to them as authorities, or it be transferred to communities as entities. Another issue raised by Honorable DP was with regard to communal land tenure issues. As indicated, it only sections 3, 19 and 20 in the Principal Act that deal with communal land tenure rights. With regard to the bill, it's only section 25A to the extent that it refers to section 3, which deals with the conversion of PDOs into ownership. As the department, is the department having the capacity to implement the bill once it's enacted? That's an interesting question. The bottom line is that we have no choice as the department. We just have to develop community. If there is no capacity. It is an instance where one would say democracy becomes expensive. Because in terms of the provisions of the Principal Act, sections 2 and 3, at the time when it was enacted, Parliament must have taken into account the least expensive way of implementing it. And then Parliament decided on an automatic conversion of PTOs and deeds of grants into ownership. In other words, the conversion was by operation of the law, which the Act said on the commencement of the Act, the holder of a PTO or deed of grant becomes the owner of that piece of land. So there was no administrative process of receiving an application, considering the application, publishing the application in the Gazette for persons to know about it. There was no procedure for objections to the application and all those other measures. Because I guess Parliament at the time looked at the cost issues as well. But now the Constitutional Court has said those automatic conversions or conversions by operation of the law, which require less administrative measures to be put in place, are unconstitutional in that they do not afford persons an opportunity to object. And by introducing those measures, obviously will require more capacity in the implementation of the bill. We have no choice but simply to develop that capacity. Now I come to the concerns raised by Honorable Plute. How far are we with the review process of communal land? And also the view of traditional authorities with regard to women becoming holders of property and lastly the public comments process. Well, basically as Honorable DM Kwesi indicated, we have a draft bill currently, which is the subject of consultations with traditional authorities. The study tool that Honorable James Kwasha referred to was aimed at enhancing the quality of the product and also to ensure consensus between stakeholders. It's a process that continues to go on, and as the DM has indicated, the minister has committed that we will have that communal land tenure bill tabled in Parliament during this financial year. As to the view of traditional authorities, authorities, on women holding property. Well, well, some traditional authorities proclaim that they are all for equality. In any event, the Constitutional Court has already ruled that women can also become traditional leaders in their own right. So the argument that women cannot hold property, wherever it may be coming from, cannot hold, unfortunately. And with regard to the public comments, it is correct that the department did not publish the bill for public comment. And at the time when it happened, the department found itself having time constraints. But we accept that that's a limitation that we own as the department. We should have published the public comment, but that has not happened, unfortunately. And then we made it clear to Parliament when the bill was introduced that the bill was not published for comment, and then requested the portfolio committee to ensure that the parliamentary processes that require public comment are embarked upon, which is what the portfolio committee did, despite the comment that we found and a public response in terms of comments, which included the comments that made the portfolio committee to adopt the position that it did on the application of sections 3, 19 and 20. It was as a result of strong comments coming from public interest organizations like universities, who were arguing that from in their experience, our ministers have been acting unlawfully, and they feared that if the sections were to be brought into operation, in implementing those sections, the minister is likely to act unlawfully. Despite our protestations or our pleas that that would not be the case, should the minister do that, the administrative and other legal remedies that could be employed, rather than leaving the act to continue to be on the face of it unconstitutional, because as I've indicated, if the bill is passed as proposed by the portfolio committee, which continues to exclude sections 19 and 20 from the operation of the act, for the public, anybody can challenge section 25A on those bases, and then on the same basis the Constitutional Court would grant relief and declare the section unconstitutional. One of the reasons which the portfolio committee adopted the position was the advice the committee got from the legal advisors that if the continued exclusion of sections 19 and 20 was on the face of it unconstitutional, as I am indicating now, the Constitutional Court would have also declared that those sections must be made applicable, not only section 3. And then our argument to them at the time was that the court only referred to section 3 because the application that TERBA brought to the Constitutional Court only dealt with section 3 and not the other sections. The court could not have dealt with the other sections which were not the subject of the challenge by the applicant, which is TERBA at the time. Concerns raised by Honorable Ngwenya, a progress report on one household, 1 hectare. Progress, unfortunately, I don't know whether maybe to say something dealing with legislation development and drafting. I'm not so much involved in the implementation of programs of the department. So this is one program where I just don't have information on. Unfortunately, I can't be. I'm not in a position to give a progress report on that particular program of the department. The other concern was whether the bill before it was introduced, whether it went through all the processes as I indicated. The bill was not published for comment by the department, but it was published for comment by the portfolio. we admit to the limitation of not having published the bill for comment. Secondly, there is no legal requirement for the department to publish bills for public comment before introduction to parliament. That's a technical thing that is there. But I'm not trying to use it as a defense to say why we did not pass it. We should have published the bill for comment. The other concern raised, if the bill is challenged, can the challenge be successful? As I've indicated, in my view, if the bill is challenged on the basis that the continued exclusion of sections 19 and 20 from the operation of from ITOC, from them operating in the entire conflict, we believe that would be declared unconstitutional. And maybe this is an area where I can request the select committee to get an opinion from each legal advisor on the particular issue, so that as it engages on it, it also has its own advisor's opinion, because it's mainly it's a legal issue which opinion you particularly echo with. Whether the department will be able to table the Commonwealth tenure legislation during this financial year, that's what we have committed ourselves doing, and we believe that we should be able to do that, because as I've indicated, we already have a draft bill that is the subject of extended consultations with traditional authorities, with other state departments, and we believe that we are ready and on course to have tabled during the course of the concerns raised by Honorable Matthew, the portfolio permit is still have, I think I've tried to deal with that, Honorable Matthew, and the continued exclusion of sections 19 and 20, that as I've indicated, the portfolio committee weighed two options, whether to continue excluding sections 13 and 20 and risk constitutional court challenge, or whether to continue to bring them into operation and run the risk of the minister transferring communal land in terms of section 720 in a manner that is unlawful, as was indicated or stated by the public interest law firms that commented on the bill as when it was published. And as to whether that does not amount to defying the constitutional court, strictly speaking, it does not amount to defying the constitutional court. The constitutional court referred to did not speak about sections 19 and 20. So it would have amounted to defying the constitutional court if we would have continued to exclude section 3 from the application. What the portfolio committee has done is that they comply strictly with the constitutional court order. That said, section 3 must be read in section 20, must be read out of section 25A. So strictly speaking, they have not defied the constitutional court order, but if any other applicant brings an application on the basis of section 19 or 20, I am confident that challenge will succeed. And the state does not dispute this fact, that if it gets challenged, the challenge will be a success. They don't dispute that. They're simply saying that to guard against that, let them take the risk of continuing to exclude them, because the alternative of allowing the minister to implement them, the minister is likely to implement them in a manner that is unlawful administratively. And as I've indicated, it's an area that I would respectfully request request the select committee to seek the advice of from the legal point of view for the committee. The other question was whether the select committee would have time to ensure that the bill is passed by the deadline that the court has given, which is the end of April, and then whether the minister can be requested to approach the court for a further extension. But that's the matter that is basically the hands of Parliament, whether it can be able to dispose of the bill within the remaining two or three. But if the committee comes to the conclusion that it won't be able to finish within the order, was basically the bill was, that's how the consent is framed, that the bill is introduced by the executive, but the processing of legislature. So it will have to be Parliament that approaches the court to have the extension, the further extension granted. And this is another matter that the committee may also seek advice from its legal advice in terms of if that is the case, how they can go about doing just that. That, I think, Honorable Chair, is my attempt to respond to the concerns raised by members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to clarify those issues.
Thank you very much.
Just a second, Chair. Sorry.
Oh, yes.
There was a question that was raised on 1 hectare, one household, an important program that we had, you know, that also was. And I think that's why Mangwenya was asking about it. That was going a long way in relation to addressing the plight of women in particular. I think perhaps just if you can, for 1 minute or two, allow my DTG to say something on it to the person who has the department in that regard. DTG in the Terindop is here.
Okay. Thank you, Chen.
Thank you, DM, Lamin, Honorable Chair, brief, respond on the issues around the 1 household, 1 hectare. As indicated, 1 household, 1 hectare, it is indeed affecting many women, although it's household, everybody in the household, but obviously most of the household are headed by women. As a department, had some challenges with respect to its implementation, so we had to review some processes because it was taking time to approve the project and also looking at the costs related to how much we can reach many households by trying to rationalize our processes. And also in the nature of the department, we also wanted to ensure that it is also aligned with other food security related projects that were done from the former departments, especially from DAF. In the process of doing that, we also got caught up with the issues of COVID, where our budget was actually has to be reduced, and the project also. The 1 household, 1 household, 1 hectare, also got affected in the process. However, I need to assure members that we are assisted with that problem. We are also working on trying to complete all the programs, projects that we could not implement them in the current financial year as the first priority, while working on trying to improve the project. So it's the program. So it is not closed because of the challenges that I've highlighted. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Now I'm going to give back to honorable members. If they do have any follow-up questions. Smith. Yes, Honorable Smith.
Can I continue, Chair?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Chair, I want to hear from Mr. Ramasala that he's mentioning that Section 19 and 20 and the exclusion and not excluding it from 25A can be challenged within a court.
Honorable Smith, before you can continue, let me give something.
It might even apply to, because it is a legal matter, so I would really feel that, you know, you just respond after me on this, because I'm raising another thing on a legal matter that I think
okay.
You can advise on.
Okay, no, it's fine.
Thank you, Chase. Saying that it, in his belief, you know, it can be challenged successfully. So the question is, in terms of the entire Act, isn't the other sections, as it is a old Act, you know, that was written before our Constitution, that other sections also can be challenged successfully and be found to be unconstitutional. If that argument is, you know, in terms of the, because the department said and the minister, the deputy minister also said that, you know, the new act that is in play that should be finished by the end of this year, will repeal the three sections that is referred to. Then why are we amending a section now that is not directed by the court? Yes. Jay, I'll hold my other question because this is the one that I ask you for permission to ask beforehand.
Okay.
If we got the feedback, I would just like to continue with the other follow-up question. Thank you.
It's hard to respond because I would want him to respond on issues relating to the time frames and how he can advise us time that we have. I can come back after you.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you, Chairperson, and honorable members.
Most of the provisions in Ultra Majority.
that we've already now acceded as common cause, Chairperson, as my colleague has alluded to. But I just wanted to give that kind of background, Chairperson. But importantly for the people of the meeting, Chairperson, I want to say, in the same decision, the court made law. It did not even say it gives Parliament an opportunity to amend as related to the extension of certain who applied for home rule. It said on the date it made the decision that 25A should be amended to give an effect that Section 3 must extend in its application for home rule. As far back as in 2018, Chairperson, that is law as declared by the Constitutional Court. Through the doctrine of stare decisis, court decision making law. So that decision in 2018 already made law that Section 3 extends to former homeless. All that is happening is that this bill that is before the committee is updating the statute book to reflect the court decision in Senko, which was made as far back as 2018. And my colleague knows this, Chairperson, it was discussed in the committee. It is a moot point. This is law. Yes, Chairperson, I agree there's a reasonable apprehension that somebody could approach the Constitutional Court on any of the provisions of this bill. Or of Antwerp. It could be 1920, it could be any other provision of that bill. Where somebody goes to court and says, I feel that this bill is against the law, and the court would apply itself to that bill and come to its conclusion. But here, Chairperson, with the committee working under a strict deadline, posed by the Constitutional Court, reasonable apprehension that there might be a challenge. To engage now in the process of amending Section 19 and 20 would only serve as a measure in light of this court-imposed deadline to pass the legislation to reflect the wishes of the Constitutional Court in the Rahobe decision, as well as update the statute book and relate to the Senko decision, which is Section 3 of ASPA. Chairperson, I also want to say that this logic, as I've just explained, and I hope I am clear to the comments, was the main reason that the portfolio committee decided that it was not going to look at it and only confine itself to Section 3 as well as Section 2, which doesn't allow legislation, and which has an external control deadline, which is a deadline imposed by the Constitutional Court. The court said, we're already out of time, the portfolio committee said, we're already out of time, the bill came a bit late before the committee. We'll extend that the committee has to request the department to seek an extension for the Constitutional Court, further extension, so that the committee could be allowed to do its work. There was significant public interest in the matter, and therefore the committee took a decision that it would only deal with this bill as a technical bill which updates the statute book in terms of saying, and also brings the ultra in line with the Constitution, as well as the extensive public interest that the interested and affected parties had on the bill because of Section 90. It was not only universities, it was not only public interest organizations, but a lot of public public consultation. And said, we feel that the area of land administration in Rwanda needs extensive, and that the transfer of land by the minister and this age in Section 19 is not sufficient to deal with the issue of land tenure. And Chairperson, also, as my colleague has alluded, the department at that stage has undertaken to bring a substantive and extensive bill, or the communal land bill, that would deal with the area of land or tenure, so at least land as rural area. And therefore, the committee felt that it would be an exercise in facility to make an amendment now to make extend the application of Section 19 only a few months down the line to deal with another bill which amends this Section 19 which does been extended because a new and extensive dealing with land administration area would be used for processing in Parliament. So those were the considerations that were in there. The issue of the time frame, the issue of the public signature, public interest, and the issue that the department was in fact in the process, as my colleague has alluded, in the process of bringing a legislation that would deal with this. I just wanted to also mention on the issue of the ability of seeking a further extension. We've already got an extension there. Even subject to the department, the party that approved the report, and with our support, seeking an extension. We were given an extension until the 29th of this. We asked her to amend the decision to make it in line with Section 9 of the Constitution and not discriminate against the community. That is why the portfolio committee are failing to adjust the line. It must be streamlined, technical bill, only updating and only making sure that ASBA was landed, at least as it related to Section 2, which offended against Section 9 of the Constitution by discriminating against women in relation to the conversion of people from trans chairperson into full ownership. I just thought, Chairperson, that I must just mention that because my colleague said legal advisors can be engaged to bring legal opinions on it is going to be a matter that is directly for us as legal advisors to write it. But the next effect of that is that it will be academic opinion. Because the court is decided legal matters that are relevant to the committee. The first issue that has been decided, Chairperson, is so we qualify the Rahubet is affected. The issue of the extension of the applicable subsection is on the also decided the problem. But I'm not so sure why legal advisors would be in writing opinions for the court as it relates to the field that is currently. So I just thought I would mention those issues. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you very much, Ndaleenati, for the clarity. Honorable members, Mr. Nati has given us clarity on the issues of the court judgment and how did it means it does not that the ball is in your hands, honorable members. After clarity. Smith? Smith?
Yes, ma'am?
Yes.
Can I continue?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair.
Don't exceed the time frame as put forward. If it is to be exceeded, we must have started the work and somebody can be able to see that work has been done, it is just left there and there. But if we are confined to those two areas as put by the a legal advisor, I think we can be able to manage, even though it might be very tight. But the question to the department, when are they going to bring the bill that deals with the other areas, more especially for land tenure in rural areas, more especially, that covers section 19 and 20 and any other. What I'm standing is very not be very good for us to be going to court while as the department and parliament we can be able to look into the bill that covers everyone and assist us moving forward. Thank you.
Department. That is Kwasha. That is DM Kwasha.
Yes, straight to Silo.
Okay.
And Ndove.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will deal with the issues raised on the bill. Other issues raised on the bill. Firstly, by Honorable Smith, whether there are other sections of the Principal Act which, if challenged, the challenge would be successful. You must have heard by now that my view is that if Section 25A, which continues to exclude 19 and 20, is challenged, I have no doubt the challenge will succeed. The other section that can be challenged is Section 3 itself. That deals with the conversion of PTOs into title deeds. But we were not very much worried about that part, because that part is the part that we are dealing with in the new Communal Land Tenure Bill. As I've indicated, the bill will obviously repeal Sections 3, 19 and 20, which are the sections in the ALSA that deal with communal land. So those are the other sections that could be successfully challenged. I think there was a follow-up question by Honorable Smith, whether, you know, what does the reading in by the court of Section 3 mean in practical terms? What it means is that from the day of the judgment, when Section 25A is read, it must be read to exclude Section 3. What it means is that it will read like the Act is applicable throughout the Republic with the exception of Sections 19 and 20, which means that Section 3 has become applicable throughout the entire Republic, which means basically, as Honorable Smith has indicated, that persons who are affected by Section 3 in their former homelands can now approach the department to have their PTOs converted into title deeds, as Section 3 of PASHA provides for. So that's the practical effect and implication of the Constitutional Court judgment. Section 3 becomes applicable everywhere in the Republic. People can enforce their rights as provided for in that text, like Teva has sought to do, which means Teva has the right to have its PTO converted into ownership from the day of the judgment. To the input by my honourable colleague, Mr. Mzengan, I'm sure members would have appreciated from your submissions that there is a difference of opinion between his office and our office, and it was in that respect that I suggested that the committee should seek legal counsel from his office in terms of how best to proceed. I was not suggesting that there must be legal a written legal opinion that the committee must seek from his advisors, but I was simply saying that as it appears from both our inputs that there is a difference of opinion, which is normal between lawyers. I was simply saying that the committee should seek guidance of its legal advisors on the issues that we were talking about, in particular section 25A exclusion, continued exclusion of sections 19 and 20. Because it was not the department's intention to amend section 3. It's not in the bill that the department sought to amend section 3. So it could not have been used as a reason that in deliberate, the Alpha Act, Principal Act, will take more than 18 months as was given by the Constitutional Court. It's only related to Section 25A, whose amendment has an impact on Section 3, is directed by the court. The last comment or concern raised on Matthew Sogato, when can the Common Internet Bill be brought before Parliament? We had committed, and I remember in the last meeting that we had with I think it was the presentation that the briefing that we made to the portfolio committee that we would bring the bill before the end of April, and I just hope that we are able to do that. But like I've indicated, we have a bill. The bill has been completed from a drafting point of view. It is only the consultation process that Honorable DM Squatcher alluded to that we are engaged in particular with traditional authorities, as well as COPTA and then other departments in terms of how best to proceed on particularly on the provisions of the bill that deal with transfer of communal land to communities. It's a contentious issue. That's why we're trying to seek consensus to the extent that we can with stakeholders, with the view that whatever provisions we present to Parliament are provisions that we have agreed upon with stakeholders. Honourable Chair, I think that sums up my response to the additional concerns raised, and my colleague will deal with the issue of one household, one hectare. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let him go on.
I had a little bit of a connection problem. I did not get the question properly. Can is it possible that it can just be repeated?
Mangwanya, your question on Mangwanya? Yes. Your question that you were not satisfied about the answer.
Okay, my question, Chair, is on the called one household, one head. The presenter, the respond was that the department have a challenge. One of the challenge that they raise is about the COVID-19 that has disturbed them in terms of this project. So, Chair, I was saying their response is not complete because there was a 1% of its budget to fund this project, which involves women. Hence, I said, Chair, it will be better for the department to bring a report. board, Chair, that is touchable than to respond the way they responded. I'm not satisfied, Chairperson. Thank you.
Did you get the question that went away?
Yes, I got it. Thanks, Honorable, and thanks, Chair. We thought there is a report available, but I think I need just to clarify what I said.
I was proposing the way Honorable Ngwenya wants the response.
Yes.
And she still remain not satisfied. My proposal will be that, in terms of that, can we propose that the department put that in writing to the committee, so that we don't delay unnecessarily. It's a proposal, Chair.
Okay.
And, sir, if I may come in.
Yes.
I actually think that we just made a mistake by asking she did propose that, Mengwenya proposed that we must go back and come with a written clear response on this matter. So I support Honorable Mutine.
Okay. Thank you very much, DM. I think it comes from a confusion of the presentation with the department. If there is something, we will write to the department to seek a clarity. But for now, I think DM and two DM, we thank you. And the presenter, we thank you for presenting. I'll give to you to say something before you leave, Honorable DM. And then after you said something, the department can leave, and the members of the select committee must remain to deal with the other members of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the honor. I think that it's been a very robust 2.5 hours. I can safely say that we take to heart issues raised in the meeting. We don't think that they were raised any nefariously. They were not party political. Our observation is that these are issues that were raised by our compatriots, fellow South Africans, with the sole purpose of trying to enhance the program we all want to reach. You must have seen and observed that, I'm sure you definitely know about the drafts, that issues related to these matters are not easy ones. They are very complex, and it is not possible to be at one at the first instance. You have observed that even with our legal gurus. We will go back. We will take into consideration everything raised here, including the issues related to time frames and the deadline. And we really think that coming to select committees and portfolio committees can only sharpen our tools of advancing the cause of creating a better South Africa as the members of the collective. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DM. You are released with the department.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Can you remain with us for 2 minutes?
Yes, sir.
And then if the provinces I think they left. Provinces, if you are still there, can you remain for 2 minutes? before we go to other members of the committee, the reason why I'm saying the provinces must remain and the energy, you said there's no way that we can seek an extension. So now I just wanted you to advise us, how are we going to deal with public consultation? Because we have to go to deal with the public participation in the area, in the whole province, the 9 provinces. So, but we have only 1 month left. I can't say April, I can't count April. So can you advise the committee? How are they going to handle it with the provinces?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chair, in terms of the NPOP rules, the committee is supposed to engage in a Section 76 public consultation within a truncated period of 6 weeks. They call it the 6 week cycle. When we calculate the 6 week cycle before, it is possible for the committee to be able to consult within that 6 week cycle and then would still be able to meet the deadline. So early April, the committee could conclude its process in this legislation, including that process which must take place in the legislature, the mandate, the consultation in the province as well as the mandate. But what is important, Jefferson, which we probably need to go and consider with my colleagues to support the committee, is a designed program, Jefferson, that is going to accommodate that six-week cycle, having consulted the province and then having agreed that we have this constraint and therefore must develop a uniform program that works towards the work of the committee completed at least by the first or second week of April. In terms of the law applicable, Chairperson, both the judgments, the key judgments on public participation during the Doctors for Life as well as the recent Lamusa judgment, do not prescribe, Chairperson, to the committee how it should consult or how it should conduct public. All the thresholds that the court has set, that there must be, there is a constitutional obligation to facilitate public involvement, and that public involvement must be so facilitated on the basis of a reasonable. In this regard, Chairperson, because this is a critical, would it be a requirement for cities and hold meeting public halls and to consult the committees on these two matters? Simply because, Chairperson, the matters in this are matters which have already been declared as law in that sense by the Constitution. Number one, Section 2 is unconstitutional because it discriminates against it. Therefore, Parliament amended to put it in line with the Constitution. Number two, as far back as 2018, Section 3 of ANCRA is unconstitutional to extend that it prohibits the application of the state. And as such, it makes it a technical thing. It does not prohibit that a public consultation because that is a constitutional obligation. However, the threshold that is aspired to in this regard is not as high as it would be if we're dealing with a substantive and extensive around the issue of energy security. The long and short of it, Chairperson, is that a program that could be adopted to determine the activities of the committee within the 6 week period would be informed by what I've just advised the committee to go through. Working with my colleagues in the administration, assist with us having to test ourselves in the program that was developed, the draft program, for consideration by the committee on whether it meets what we would reasonably consider to be the reasonable standard of facilitating public involvement. I hope I'm clear, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ndadenaki. You are clear. I think what I can say, you and the administrative go back and do the program for the committee so that we can see what can we do in the shortest time that we are having, and we will even advise the provinces how to but we cannot determine to the provinces. Remember, they are autonomous. We cannot determine to them to say do this and do this, but for now we can have our own program and deal with it, and then the legislature, if possible, we can combine with the provincial legislature to handle the public participation together, if possible. But if not possible, they will do it on their own. Thank you very much, Ndatenachi.
We need, we can't just give them to go and work and not time frames. Looking at the time frame, small amount of time, can they assure us when are they going to come back to us, to give us that draft program, and so that we can look at it and see whether it fits the program of the committee, and then start the ball rolling. If we just leave them, they can come back next month. we'll be out of the time. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matibe. Asta and Robert and the members of the committee, you know very well that the House Chair granted us permission to use any day that is not affecting other committees. Either it's Thursday or Friday or Saturday, he said, it's any day that we decided on, he will approve because of the challenge that we are facing. So I think before the end of this week, Nati and my colleagues, please let me get the program so that I can communicate with the members of the portfolio, the select committee. How are we going to handle this public participation? And then, the provinces that are attending, thank you very much. You have seen that we are facing a serious challenge, members of the provincial legislature. Please go back to your province and assist us, because it is not going to only assisting us, it's assisting the whole country. So go back to your province and see how to do it. And if possible, like I said, we can do joint public participation together as the select committee and the provinces, if possible. So I would like to take this opportunity to thank you very much for attending our meeting. In short, I remember we invited you in a short time, and thank you very much for attending our meeting. So the provinces, you are released, and let's finalize the last item of our
chairperson.
That is Smith.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just 2 points on what you said now. The first thing is that the said must come back to us with it and implement it accordingly. Because we can't be dictated the program, but a proposal can be set or presented before the committee for approval. The second thing is in terms of joint public participation. I think it's a dangerous practice to start in with, because we need to make sure that the committee does their work and the provinces do their work, so that we don't create a precedent where we try and incorporate it, because we've already got judgments against the NCOP before because of the processes around public participation. So I would propose that we don't do that specifically, but allow each legislative body to handle their processes within a specific time frame. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Smith. Your point is noted. As you remember, I said the legislature, they are autonomous. so I can't dictate to them. So I was just saying, if possible, the word if possible, must take it to consideration. Provinces, thank you very much for attending our meeting. Thank you. You are released.
Thank you, Chair.
No, not you. Are you Provence? You must remain in the meeting.
He's representing the province.
No, I'm saying the legislature
is my section 75 kicking in here. So in terms of the 76, sir.
Yeah, no. Provinces and other stakeholders, thank you very much. You know, we invited the traditional leaders. Traditional leaders, thank you very much for being in our meeting. Sure, and I see them here. Oh. Thank you very much, traditional leaders, for participating. You are released. Thanks. Committee. Honorable members from other provinces. Honorable members from the legislatures, you are released. I can see Outing is still in the meeting. I can see other people are still in the meeting. Can you leave the meeting and let's remain with the select committee members only?
The host can assist us.
Please. The host? Oscar?
Yes, yes, Chair. I have to do it one by one.
Oh, okay.
But we can continue, Chair. It's fine. We can continue. We form a quorum. Okay. I'm just checking which members are also present. So we form a quorum. We can continue.
Okay. Members, I put in before you the minutes of the last week, of the last week meeting. Before you for adoption, I don't know whether you have any corrections that you wanted to make or anything that you wanted to subtract from the minutes of last week meeting.
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the minutes with the rider that the secretariat must not forget to send us minutes on time. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, I second the minutes. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Aska, make sure that you send the minutes on time to the honorable members. Thank you very much, honorable members. I think we are preparing ourselves to go to sitting for attending our meeting. Hey, today I enjoyed the meeting. I enjoyed the meeting. Thank you. Keep it up, honorable members. Yeah, no, this is the, you know, for the first time we are dealing with this. We are taking time and discussing. Normally our meeting with our members. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Come to conclude the business of